Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Dr. Jennifer Daniel, and you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniel on Blog Talk Radio, Blake Radio Network, and this is February 25th, it's 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2014. Now, you're hearing a lot of sound there in the background. I'll have to tell you where I am and how I came to be here. I'm actually in Panama, and approximately half an hour ago, I realized I had no internet connection. And so I had to catch a cab from the mangrove, which is kind of edge of the jungle, basically, into town and find an internet cafe. That's where I am. And, of course, in the hurry, I did not bring my headphones. I kind of think that if I had, maybe the noise in the background wouldn't be so apparent. However, never fear. I had an alternative recording going, so if there's any trouble, then that alternative recording will be posted tomorrow. Now, tonight's topic, wow, let the game begin. You know, we thought that the barbarism of the Roman times was past, that no longer were humans making a spectator sport out of murdering their fellow humans and placing bets on it. But actually, really, things haven't changed much. They've just been relabeled. And so it's not a good talk about the analogy between the Roman games, between the professional sports. We have to mention a little bit about government because that's an important piece of it. You can't get the Hollywood games that we have now without the participation of government. And I'm finally going to draw the analogy between modern medical care and the condition of the patient. And the goal today is to let you know how you can escape becoming the person who's murdered at the sword of the gladiator. I also have to talk about vitality counts. Vitality counts is an out of stock. And they're coming back into stock. I've located organic, wildcrafted, chemical-free ingredients, and have no idea how difficult that is, even in these times. But I located them. I even located a manufacturer who will put together the formula just so and not use flow agents. We don't have to worry about magnesium stearate. Is it good? Is it bad? Or is it neutral? So I'm very excited about being able to add an extra level of purity. And the Vitality Capsules will be available in March, around about March 10th. So we're really excited about that. Okay, back to tonight's topic, which is let the games begin. I first want to talk about the Roman games and how all of that plays. First of all, in the pit, there were a lot of players. So we're just talking about on the floor of the Colosseum, there was the gladiator. There was a slave or a peasant, and often there were wild animals. And generally, when two individuals or two beings, let's say, were placed in the pit to fight, it was a very lopsided match. It was very rarely an even match. And so what you would bet on, or the whole point of the game, was to see how the gladiator had his armor, had his protection, how he could draw out the struggle and entertain the crowd with the suffering of, let's say in this case, his unarmed peasant. In those days, they were lightly armed, but not enough to put up a reasonable fight. And if a gladiator killed his opponent too quickly, then the crowd would boo, and that was a horrible, horrible thing. It was frowned upon, and the gladiator would even be punished for that. So if the gladiator draw out the suffering, make it take place over a reasonable period of time and entertain the crowd. We see this in boxing matches, for example. Certain famous stars took on Conan too quickly, and they were, you know, people felt, wait a minute, buy a ticket, I haven't been entertained, that person was knocked out in the first or second round, and I'm not happy with that. So this is actually carryover from Roman time, when the gladiator in the ring had to draw out the process. He couldn't just go in there and whack off the head of his opponent. He had to little slice here, little slice there, let the unarmed opponent or opponent run around a little bit, and have a little bit of suspense entertainment. So in that sense, there is an analogy between many of our modern sports where we buy tickets and the process. Now, when it comes to modern sports, it's our belief that the people there on the field have a choice, and they decide to be there. And so that's okay. And we accept a certain amount of drama and even physical and violent harm. For example, the injury rate in the NFL is 50% per year. Pretty impressive, I thought. So now it gets better than this. So it's not just gladiators. There are many types of gladiators. Gladiators specialize, and each gladiator got different types of training. So I'm going to talk about the different types of gladiators and some modern-day parallels to those gladiators. We have, put on a list here. There's one called Thymocharis, and this is a sword fighter. But he used two swords and no shield. And so this gladiator, because he had two swords, could really do a lot of cutting and stuff. And this would be analogous to the general surgeon of modern times. Then we have the Epidarius. And Epidarius fights from a distance, fights from a war chariot, and murders his opponent using the chariot very much at a distance. Never is it hand-to-hand, never directly. And this is comparable to the anesthesiologist. Anesthesiologist, you know, the patient is draped, he's sitting off on the side, he's dialing his dial, and that's what can lead off into the death of the patient. And if you talk to your surgeon, he will tell you your biggest risk of death in surgery is the anesthesiologist. So the anesthesiologist finds his corresponding partner in Epidarius. And then we have Lactarius. that might not be pronounced right. So vicarious most is like uses a lasso instead of a net, and most likely the lance instead of a trident. So this typical gladiator snags his opponent using the lasso and pulls him to the ground. And this is pretty much like the primary care doctor who reins in the hand of the patient. So the primary care doctor that uses it by there, or the one you see from your annual screening. And so this is your kind of more of your intake process of reining you into the Coliseum. And then there's Mermillo. And this particular gladiator has a large crested helmet, the visor, the fish on its crest, and a little shield, as well as the lance. And this is more analogous to the ear, nose, and throat person. The ear, nose, and throat doctor has a helmet, visor, and sometimes have a shield to protect him from the splash of blood. So now they wear these shields to protect themselves from the splash of blood, and of course the lance when they cut. Then there's Retarius. Retarius is, this guy's really tricked out. He's got a trident, he's got a net, he's got a dagger, scaled armor to protect himself, he's got covering on his left arm, protecting his shoulder piece to protect the net. And this guy had so many ways to harm, yet is himself protected. And with the total offensive gladiator, they can often create death quickly. This is most analogous to cardiologist, who is a total offensive player and inflicts pain with many devices. It can be the open heart surgery with the bandsaw or going down the middle of the chest, opening up the chest plate. It can be the catheter going through a thigh, going into the coronary arteries. It can be the deadly prescriptions. It can be the electricity shocking the chest. So Retarius, just like the cardiologist, Retarius has a total armamentarium. This person is really armed. Embers of cardiac death. Most people who die of cardiac death are actually under medical care. Then we have Tertarius. Now, Tertarius is a substitute fighter. And this is analogous to the room doctor, who's a substitute for your primary care doctor, really kind of pinch hits for all the other specialties, and can arm himself more defensively and offensively, can inflict harm on many different levels and in many different ways. I'd like to announce we have a chat room going. It's healingwithdrdaniels.chattango.com. That's D-R Daniels. so it's Chattango, healingwithdrdaniels.chattango.com. Yes, we will not do another broadcast for this particular internet cafe. So sign up to the chat room, and you can send me comments, too, like that I get to read while I'm doing the broadcast. So these are the highlights of some of these specialists. I just want to mention a few more specialists. There's Thracian, who has a curved short sword and scaled armor covering his left arm. And there's Sexosaur, who has a large helmet with eyes or holes, has a visor and small medium shield. So some of these gladiators are more defensive, some are more offensive than others. And they can also work together in the ring, working on the victim. So the setting here is everyone in the ring is a slave, is owned and controlled by an individual or corporation outside the ring. In fact, you mean like corporations, but businessmen. And men would enter the ring with the hope of winning their freedom. And it was not definite how many fights a gladiator would have to win to get his freedom. It was also not definite how many which fight the gladiator might lose. Now, there are gladiators and then there are gladiators. So the higher level gladiators who are very well armed, who are experts, who fight again and again and again for long periods of time, and these, you can compare it to physicians. Now, physicians have an issue, too. bishops have a drama that they're playing out, which is how many protocols can they follow or fail to follow before the insurance company steps in and says, hey, we're not paying you anymore for that protocol, which happens a lot. And whole careers are just destroyed because the insurance company, or many of them, decide to stop paying for a certain protocol or method a doctor is using to injure, inflict, or maim the patient. And so the insurance company can think of as the person actually owning the doctor, the person who's paying the doctor, the person the doctor is dependent upon for his financing and for his funding to in order to be able to enter the ring in order to be able to fight. Then there's the hospital. And the hospital, you can think of as the owner of the ring, the one that makes the rules and tells the gladiator, hey, if you want to fight here, you want to win fights here, you've got to play by my rules. You've got to do this or you've got to do that. So obviously, the doctor at the gladiator has a conflict here. One set of rules from the insurance company is likely to conflict with another set of rules or protocols from the hospital. So this creates the stress, it creates the drama in terms of this gladiator being able to inflict harm on his patient and get paid for it and not get penalized. And the penalties are inflicted by the insurance company. Then you have the legal system. If the patient complains, hey, I was harmed too severely or too soon in the battle, then the malpractice company and the legal system get involved and say, hey, you harmed this person not by the rules. You harmed this person too soon in the fight, too soon in the encounter. So you did not allow the drama to unfold, the entertainment to take place. So the patient is like the little flame, dancing around with little armor, unlikely to win. Even if he does, he's never free. He always has another test, another pronouncement. He's always enslaved to the monthly premiums of the insurance company. So the patient is like, actually is a gladiator called Little Flame. And this gladiator called Little Flame is put in the ring, is scantily armed, if at all, and has to fight or evade the gladiator. And of course, Little Flame generally does very poorly. And in our modern system, we only have to look at the 861,000 Americans that die every single year at the hands of the healthcare system to realize that there's some pretty high-level intense games going on. And these games are very amusing. When I say amusing, I mean they occupy a large amount of people's spare time. I am just shocked when I talk to people and they tell me that they just had a test, which always involves a needle or deadly radiation or swallowing some deadly serum, and that they are waiting for the results, or they're preparing for yet another test, or they've had a biopsy, and they don't know how it will be, and they hope it turns out fine. And so this is simply a drama. The person is role-playing as the gladiator deals one more blow and another blow and another blow. And so if the surgeon, for example, fail to do a biopsy first and instead goes to the big surgery, then that's not allowed because that person, the doctor didn't drag it out long enough. So there are actually rules in place to make sure that things take as long as possible. And the equipment for gladiators is not based on an absolute rule. Equipment can vary to a point, not much, but to a point. And so it's the same with the doctor. Some surgeons can use, more different types of surgeons may choose to use the same equipment, and that's okay. And so the patient, we're going to use the word patient because that's the word used in modern time. So the patient then is the person in the ring that's designated to lose. You have the gladiator working and assaulting this lesser individual who's unarmed. And usually, I have to say usually to the death. And this deduction is supported by the fact that people who do not receive medical care in the United States actually live on average 7 years longer than people who do receive medical care. So we can say then that the life of most Americans, if not all, most Americans is actually shortened by exposure to medical care. So how does the person get in the ring in the first place? Well, the first thing a person's got to do to get in the ring is buy health insurance. Got to buy health insurance. Buy health insurance, then they check you at the door and they say, do you have insurance? In other words, will the insurance company, have the insurance company been paid, and will the doctor and the hospital, will the gladiator, maligned you and dismembered you, will that gladiator have an opportunity to get paid? And will the hospital, in charge of the ring here, will they have an opportunity to get paid? And if so, then you are granted entrance. Now, a lot of times, that doesn't get you into the ring. It just gets you into the perimeter. We call that the lobby. And in order to get past the lobby, you've got to do some preliminary tests. And that's where the drama begins. Games don't begin there, but the drama does. And so you get a blood test. Oh, my God, my cholesterol high. Will it go higher? Will I have a heart attack? Maybe a stroke? What about the medicine? Will there be side effects? Will I be strong enough to endure the side effects? This big drama comes up. All this uncertainty, all these questions into a life that otherwise might have been pretty straightforward. And so then the first side effect comes. You can liken that to the cardiologist's first blow of the sword. And the person has a choice. They can decide to continue with the medication, endure the side effects. They'll decide to endure the side effects because I think I'm going to get benefit. I'm going to gamble. I'm going to gamble that maybe my insurance will pay for it. I'm going to gamble that if I get worse complications, then the insurance company will pay for it. Then the insurance company, of course, is smiling for a while because, again, this is the progress of the game, the progress of the gladiator battle. And then as the first complication shows up, a lot of times it's a stroke. That's not people on that. Certain cholesterol medications actually get a stroke every year from the medication because they took the medication. Then when the stroke comes, what about the wife or what about the spouse? Will the spouse be a faithful spouse? Will the spouse pitch in and take care of them? With all this drama back, what will it be on his job? Will he be able to keep his job? And can he get disability? So all these different things play in. Incredible, incredible play. And the people in the stands watching this, and believe me, this is very closely watched by quite a few people. The politicians are very concerned about this whole, the drama in the gladiator ring. Because if you've got a person worrying about their next test, worrying about the outcome of the test, worrying about all these things, they don't have time to worry about what the government is doing. And the government taking away their rights? Who needs rights when you can die? And so you have an individual, just like his own son, who is totally distracted from the events of the day, totally distracted from the forces impinging on his life, totally distracted from maybe the rising taxes and declining services like in ancient Rome. You know, they had these problems. And so the spectators in the stands that are cheering and booing our relatives, oh, my God, John is sick. He's such a nice guy. I'm going to miss him so, and I hope he gets better. John, hang in there. John, the next one, you know, John, if you do this. All right, well, if it doesn't like you, they say, oh, you know, John got this week. That's what he deserves. Bad karma. We have back and forth. And so this whole drama is an opportunity for each spectator to validate his own observation of life and his life's values. His relatives, his siblings, and his employer. Oh my gosh, my better employee, and I hope he hurries and gets back to work. Oh gosh, he's already had 10 years in. Things will never get vested. So give the employers basically betting on the drama. Then you have the public, you have the newspaper. We saw so-and-so had XYZ surgery and died of complications. So it really keeps everyone wrapped up and occupied. And everybody bets on the outcome, and that's the beauty of it all. And the bets, of course, are totally, totally legal and encouraged. Who bets on the outcome? Well, hospitals bet on the outcome. Hospitals is a gamble. The hospital decides the bet how long the person can stay in the hospital before the insurance company decides to deny payment. The hospital takes a gamble as to which gladiator is the best one to inflict these things on the patient. We have a question here in the chat room. Which weapon did I wield? As a primary care doctor in family practice, I was assigned to wield the weapon of the prescription pad. And the power of the prescription pad really is not to be underestimated. And premature death due to prescriptions and complications of drugs actually becoming the number one cause for malpractice. And as the system is evolving, the medical system in the United States, which is the surrogate for the Coliseum Games in Roman times, it was not understood just how powerful a weapon the prescription pad was. And so patients and doctors were taught to view the prescription pad as a totally harmless entry into the Coliseum, a totally harmless entry that would allow them to continue on to endure the next step, which is maybe an x-ray test or a blood test or a biopsy, or surgery, and then a surgery complication, and another complication, and another surgery. So patients are ready for that trip, but they didn't realize it ended so early. And by having people pay insurance premium, people want to get their money's worth. They want to embark on this journey. They want to, okay, I'm going to take this drug, and I'm going to survive, and I'm going to bear up under it. And I'm going to be the David that stands up to the Goliath and this drug. Well, unfortunately, drugs, period, are far more powerful than anticipated and are resulting in abrupt death and are not giving the long, torturous, entertaining experience that people have come to expect. So the betting on the outcomes we were talking about, that was just a digression for this question from the chat room. Will the assets of the dead peasant be seized from the unpaid portion of the bill, or will the peasant escape with his life and his assets? And so all of these are actual gambles. And I can tell you as a doctor, when I knew the patients in the hospital, I was stressed because, first of all, I didn't know if the insurance company was going to pay me or not, but that was actually the least of my stresses. The next stress is, could I help my patient get out of the line? In other words, could I check back often enough at the hospital to make sure the hospital had not rewritten my orders and given the patient the drug that he actually wasn't able to tolerate? Was the hospital bill going to be paid, or would the poor patients be bankrupted? So all these things I worried about. So I wanted to get the patient in the hospital and get them out as quickly as possible before it could be harmed and before their assets could be totally seized. Because obviously, what good is it if you take a person from having home to being homeless? It doesn't make any sense. That's not really helpful for the patient. So that was what I worried about. Now, if I was a hospital-based doctor, which I was not, but as a hospital-based doctor, I would worry that the x-ray department, I have to order a certain number of x-ray tests to keep the x-ray department going. I have to order certain drugs and not other drugs to keep the pharmacy department profitable. I have to admit the person to the right unit. I can't admit them to a step-down unit. When I have to turn them, I admit them to first to the emergency room, then to a bed in the hallway. This is how bad things were in the 90s. Then to a regular room, and then I could get into the cardiac observation unit, and then, of course, you would be destabilized by the standing orders. The cardiac unit, the routine pain pill, routine sleeping pill, routine digestive pill, and so on, say nothing about the hospital diet. Then we would go from the cardiac observation unit to stepped up to the telemetry unit, to cardiac care, and possibly intensive care unit, if the complications became enough. And again, as a doctor, as a specialist, hospital-based doctor, there is no concern for complications. The only concern is, did you follow the protocol, and was everything done the way the hospital wants it done? And so a lot of times, I would actually be afraid to consult a specialist because of what they would do. And sometimes I would just have to consult them because I knew what the next step in the protocol was, and I wasn't going to do it. And so, you know, as a gladiator in the ring, you know, you have to injure the patient this way and injure them that way. Okay, a blood test, all right? More blood tests. A spinal tap, okay, more spinal tap. And so, in the particular patient I'm thinking of, I admitted the patient to the hospital. I knew, so sure as anything, the patient had viral meningitis. It was very straightforward. He had neurological deficit. He had a fever. The fever spiked and went down. And there wasn't any sense of total mental clouding. But he had a fever. He had a crushing headache. Worst headache he ever had in his whole life. A little unsteady. I said, it's obviously viral meningitis. So I decided I would consult the neurologist who attempted the spinal tap 4 times. And I have a patient in the hospital. He would rather die at home than get cured in the hospital. Left the hospital. That I do at home to get rid of his meningitis. At home from his meningitis. His wife was totally amazed. And I said, well, okay, Mr. Jones, you still ready to go back to work? He said, yes, I do, but give me 2 weeks off to make it look good. I said, okay, you have 2 weeks off. But again, this is a gladiator game. And my patient was more aware of it than I was. He knew that he had to take off at least 2 weeks from work to make the whole thing look good. This was just a game. It was a big act put on for the entertainment of the employer, the insurance company, the hospital. So he realized all these people had to be appeased. Now, even his wife had to be appeased. You know, you can think of your spouse as being in the stands of the Coliseum. Now, of course, the better seats all go to the hospital, the insurance companies, and government representatives. They get to see all the information, all the data, all the records. Who is the plate and the ring being slaughtered, and the spectators higher up in the stands in the nosebleed seats, which would be the relatives, the public. They don't get to see the records or anything. They just have to guess and hope for the best. When he first came to my office, he said, Doctor, I'm really sick. I said, So I said, you know what? I think you have meningitis. And here's how you cure it at home. So I told him to get from the store, he could cure it at home. And so I come home and tell his wife, okay, I went to see the doctor, and I got meningitis, and we're going to take care of it at home. Well, she just said, oh, no, you don't. I'm not going to have my husband take care of his meningitis at home when we have insurance. And, of course, he had a very good paying job as well. So he went to the hospital, and he could see the way things were unfolding in the hospital that it was really, really not good. But again, as a primary care doctor, as a gladiator of certain status, not allowed to say or do certain things, I didn't have the authority to tell him to get out of the hospital and to even sign him out. So finally, he took it upon himself to threaten the neurologist, who then promptly discharged him. And these are some things that spectators say. And spectators always egg on the battle and up the ante and increase the drama and the excitement. And they say things like, you should get the check. You care about your children? Get prenatal care. And this is actually amusing when you realize that the patient In this case, the cousin is being slaughtered. It's suffering from many delusions. First of all, volunteering to even pay health insurance premiums. And obviously, a few too many Americans caught on to this and stopped paying their premiums. So the government had to pass this plan. The delusion a person has to suffer from is that the gladiator or specialist who's in charge with dismembering him piece by piece actually has an accurate diagnosis. And in the case of chemotherapy, it actually believes he has cancer. As of 2012, we don't have 2013 statistics or numbers, as much as 50% of all cancers, people under therapy for cancers, actually don't have a condition that would shorten their life if left untreated. So many harmless conditions have been renamed as cancers, and people are actually undergoing chemotherapy. Which conditions are these? Lobular carcinoma in situ, if you're a woman who's been diagnosed with breast cancer. You know, check your psychology. Ductal carcinoma in situ, if you're a woman who's been diagnosed with breast cancer. That's your psychology. Near survival with, really your survival without medical intervention is outstanding. So another cancer is prostate cancer. Prostate cancer actually has a higher survival than not having prostate cancer. So the slayer, in order to get in the ring, has got to volunteer to pay premium. The next thing he has to do is, to the cousin to get in the ring is to believe that he has a medical affliction that requires him to personally endure and accept torture. The next thing he has to believe, another delusion, is that the torture is beneficial. The next thing he has to believe is that his insurance company actually has an intent to pay his bill. And the delusion that he would have is that the insurance company has any obligation to pay. So you have a willfully enters the ring unarmed. I mean, this is profoundly unarmed. You think going into a hospital, you almost every last bit of them. You have no weapon whatever, not even pencil and paper, a lot of times not even a cell phone. Totally stripped naked and puts on a flimsy cotton gown with a huge hole in the back. And the doctor is armed with a prescription pad, armed with deadly ionizing radiation in the form of any of the many x-rays he may order, armed with needles, and some needles so large they are more accurately described as daggers, armed with a bandsaw, all these things he's armed with. And of course, finally, the patient's actually anesthetized while a lot of the mutilation and dismemberment takes place. You're going to a bullfight when you're the bull, signing up for that, or willingly being the ring of a battle when you're the one scheduled for slaughter. And the people who are betting, everyone's betting, no one's betting that you might survive. No, people are betting what will it take in the course of a lot of people say, oh, Dr. Daniels, you know, I just went to a doctor's visit and I came back home just fine. That's the beauty of it, is that this gladiator game, this coliseum game, this entertaining amusement takes place over years. It's absolutely wonderful. One particular modern mutilation, that's really captivating. And the woman, oh my God, now we get prenatal care. And every intervention the doctor visits upon this woman is filled with complications, filled with drama. And each test always, could it possibly be awful? What might be next? Oh, let's do it. It's going properly. When that is not proper growth. And of course, the ultrasounds, you will find improper growth because the ultrasound is positive. Let's just say mom and kids survive that. Then you have, oh my God, the contractions are too early. She might have a premature baby. but given medicine to stop the labor, even though they proven ineffective. Oh my God, it's going too long. Okay, just reduce the labor, even though they proven to harm the baby. So these are, and then finally you have the baby, and then you have the immunization, and you have the antibiotics, and then you have the babies. So there's all the drama, And so if you recognize the word drama, they can say, wait a minute, I don't know if I want to buy a ticket to that performance. And so, the thing to understand is that just like a bull is screaming for the bullfight, you want to get just the right bull. You want to get a bull that's got vitamins. He's definitely going to move. It's not vitamins. Not too much vitamins. And so patients or peasants who are thrown to the gladiators are carefully screened. And only the ones who have enthusiasm for the sport, enthusiasm for the mutilation, and will willingly play their part are selected. And patients are screened as well. And patients walk away at many after paying insurance premiums. The present Obamacare has a CBA. You end up having a tax surplus at the end of the year. So you can suggest a withholding so you don't have a tax surplus. Or if you're offshore, say it's to get insurance. So the first thing anyone can do is choose not to be insured. The second thing is they can realize that when that doctor lifts out his prescription pad, that's a deadly weapon. Oh, excuse me, doc, put that down. Be careful who you point that at. So the doctor doesn't think you need a prescription. He can be polite about the prescription. He can say, okay, doc, I got the prescription. Now, what else could I do that might help me to take that test? Of course, it's always not showing up. It's just not going. Don't show up. And so self-inflicted torture is not a crime. And so if you have two mutually consenting adults, it actually isn't a crime. So patients need to realize what they're consenting to. What they're consenting to is to being a modern-day entertainment, a modern-day distraction from the events of the day. We're going to be ready to take questions in a few minutes. So if you're on the telephone line, you can put your button there for questions. And if you're in the chat room, you can keep adding your questions in. Okay. So it's kind of like a basketball game. So only the players in the basketball game demand a salary. Unfortunately, the patients knew what entertainment they did was in bad. And basketball players know they're playing a game. They've been using it to profit of others. They know they could get hurt, maybe even die. But they accept this as a risk in exchange for their very high pay. Patients, on the other hand, have yet to awaken to this reality. They've yet to demand their pay for the incredible endless and every member of their family. Their family is totally distracted from the reality of their life. Instead, getting involved and caught up into this drama. So you need to realize that you get to choose. You can choose. Or you can just walk away. Walk away. There is this mom when I was a kid. 50 ways to leave your lover. You can say, 50 ways to leave your gladiator. Be really good. So it's up to you, and you get to choose, and that's the answer. The natural answer is to simply choose to walk away. All right, let's see. We have a question here. Hi, you're on the air. Okay, so that person... Okay, so hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Jennifer. This is Bill.
Hello.
Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Yeah.
I wanted to run your analogy a little bit further. When I used to teach sociology of sport, I showed a video called North Dallas 40, which was a fictional representation of what probably went on with the Dallas Cowboys. But one of the most disturbing things in there is the use of any kind of drug, both legitimate and illegitimate pharmaceuticals, to prop these football players up so they can perhaps do permanent injury to their bodies. And in spite of all the testing and everything, there is such money involved with this stuff that drugs are used routinely among almost all professional athletes, usually to you know, their deficit at the end of their careers and their lives. It's not a question, it's a comment.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay.
And what Bill said is true, is that the ultimate impact is to shorten the person's lifespan, and that's very real. And that happens not only with professional athletes, but with professional individuals, not only with steroids, but with other seemingly more harmless, a benign drug, like antibiotics is what comes to mind. Okay, we have tons of questions in the chat room. All right. All right, the question is, which weapon did I use? I answered that question. Is modern medicine ritual slaughter? Absolutely. It absolutely is ritual slaughter. And I think that's what people need to understand. It's really a ritual slaughter. And it's legalized. And if your doctor does everything right, then you will, on average, die 7 years earlier than had he not been in your life, no matter how charming and well-meaning he might be. The other ritual, which I would like to just mention, is for women to engage in prenatal care, women to engage in vaccinating their children. It's the same as saying to a woman, take your child, throw him into the fire, then go rescue him, and if he's alive, then you get to raise him. And that's what it is. Modern medicine is indeed ritual slaughter. Next question. Can education be considered a weapon? Absolutely, but the education here that's most important is not even the doctor's education, but it's the propaganda education of the patient, of the victim. And that is the real weapon. I mean, I have had patients come in to me and I say, you know what, that drug you just asked for is so dangerous. I don't want to prescribe it because I don't want to kill you. You know, you've done this to me, you know, pretty consistently over the past years. You've added a fair amount of income to me and my children, and said it's very well, and I'm very thankful for that, and I don't want to kill you. And a patient laughs at me, the doc writes the script. That's okay, all right. And I actually have to make them promise me that when they got XYZ size, that I whipped out the package insert and showed it to them, okay, here it is, you know, 25 inches by 17 inches. And I would read a few side effects and said, if you get any of these, you promise me you will stop this medicine. All right, doc. And without fail, within a week, I would get a phone call saying, yep, doc, you're right. And so education is a weapon, but the most dangerous education is the propaganda that they teach the patient. And so what they're now doing is they're teaching kids in something called health class the same fallacies and lies that I was taught in medical school. Because I homeschooled my kids when they were about 13, and then I put them in language school, and they had health class. They'll come back and tell me stuff. I'm like, that's not true. They're lying to you. So the education that is the weapon is the miseducation that children are getting in school, in health class. Is there a bone we can point at these people? Okay. For those of you in the audience who don't know what a bone pointing is, you point a bone at someone, or in ancient cultures, a primitive culture, the whole culture believed that if one bone was pointed at you, then you would die. So the medicine man was in charge of bone pointing. And because he believed it, and everyone else believed it, then when he pointed the bone, the person actually did die. And so our listener is asking, is there a bone that can be pointed at these people? And the answer is yes, and it's the bone of truth. And this bone, when the doctor writes a prescription or orders a test, whatever, you can just say, hey, doc, let's skip the torture. Have you ordered this test before? You say, well, last time you ordered this test, what was the result? And the doctor will tell you it was negative. You say, okay, fine. If this test is negative, what are we going to do about it? And he'll tell you. Then you say, well, if it's positive, what are we going to do about it? And he'll tell you. if they were done, we're going to do the same thing, just positive and negative. Let's skip the torture and get on with it. So that's if you, you know, want to move things down the road. But definitely skip as many torture points as possible, down to a biopsy, I know that. But that's a cut in the skin, often done in a hospital. You're being exposed to a hospital-acquired infection, which killed 99,000 people in 2013. But you cannot accept the torture points as benign, because you're not. So the bone you can point is to look at the doctor and say, let's get the torture. Can you help me? And the doctor actually will be stunned by that, and he'll say, no, I can't offer you. I think I can. And you say to him, how can you help me? And so focus on not your lab test or doing the test or getting the results. If you have a doctor who's been at this for more than 5 years, he's seen enough of these tests, they can tell you, this is usually what a testing needs. Okay, so why is this trauma essential? That's a good question. In the Roman times, what happened is as the government became more oppressive, as it looted the treasury, as it looted the citizens, as it incurred more debt, as it robbed citizens of their civil rights, and just human rights, it had to create a distraction. And the distraction was the game to the Colosseum. And in modern times, the distraction is the game to the Colosseum. It's the visit to your doctor. It's the drama of waiting for the next test. I had people call me and tell me that they were absolutely made sick just by waiting for test results. And that's exactly what the goal is. How does medicine use science as a pretense to back up its diagnosis and other claims? The answer is children are trained in school to believe in science, that science is infallible. And so by getting humans at a young age to believe that they can suspend their own reasoning process and just totally believe in whatever science says, that allows medicine to use science as a pretense. But if each individual would say, wait a minute, let me figure this out, then it would make the science, which is only a marketing tool in modern times, would make it ineffective. Okay. A hospital like prisons? Absolutely. Those guards you see at the hospital are not there to protect the patients. They are there to protect the staff. They are there to make sure patients don't escape. That's what they're there for. Okay. Is this like a poker game with a mark? Answer is yes. And the mark is, of course, you. The mark is the person showing up for the doctor's visit. The mark is the person paying the insurance premium. And let's see, is a prescription pad a loaded weapon? The answer is absolutely. And this person asks, is it safe until you get it filled? No, it's not, because now what's happening, especially with electronic medical records, is the medical records are available to your employer and to your insurance company. And so if you fail to get a prescription filled, your employer can actually have information about that and deny you sick leave for your days off, for example, because, well, you didn't get the prescription filled, so therefore you couldn't really have been sick. You were not making every effort to get well. Therefore, no sick leave. And so as soon as that prescription is written and logged into your chart, it's a weapon. You know, as they say, you can fly. So once you get a prescription, in these modern times, you probably are obligated to get it filled, but there still is not yet the level of surveillance to determine if you took it. So you can always go to the toilet and flush a few pills every day. Okay. All right. And that is it for tonight's question. Wait, let me just check one more source. Is there any more questions? Okay, I don't see any more questions. Well, we have a topic for next week. As you guys know, I live in Panama. So today, my husband and I had to go to the bank. And because of our, well, mild language barrier, we had to go upstairs, where only the super rich people go. And so on the table was a brochure for livestock. And what did I see there? Well, they were trying to tell the wealthy farmers what drugs they should be feeding their cattle. So next week, I'm going to talk to you about what drugs are probably in your grass-fed beef and other agricultural products. So that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about what's going on behind the scenes in terms of what they say you get and what you're really getting. And, of course, how to avoid this naturally. Okay. Well, thank you very much. It's been a great show, and I will see you next week. We're going to find out what's in your meat. Oh, come on, a few vegetables.